I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. 10,000 people turn 65 every day in this country. As the population ages, the caregiving crisis is only growing. More than 45 million people provide unpaid care to a loved one. Over 60% are working in addition to caregiving, and 30% are caring for children. We have been doing a lot more shows about caregiving because of my recent experience and just learning about how hard it is and trying to get resources for your loved one. Knowing that the system is broken is one thing, but being in the middle of it is another experience altogether. And if you're in the Bay Area, we are putting together two caregiving events, and we would love to see you there this Saturday from 11 to 3. At our 220 Montgomery space in San Francisco, and then on July 9th at 5:30 p.m. for a special live Your Call broadcast at San Francisco's main public library. You can find more information at kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's conversation, if you're a caregiver or you have been a caregiver, we'd love to hear about your experience. If you're aging, do you have a caregiving plan in place? What policy changes would you like to see? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by two guests. Dr. Jessica Ang is medical director at OnLock, a full-service healthcare program that includes medical, home care, transportation, and senior services. Dr. Ang oversees the quality of care delivered at OnLock PACE sites in San Francisco, Alameda, and Santa Clara counties. Dr. Ang is a board-certified doctor in internal medicine and geriatric medicine. She previously worked as a geriatrician and medical director at the San Francisco VA healthcare system. Her clinical work focused on helping veterans keep their independence and live at home for as long as possible. Hi, Dr. Ang. Thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me and putting the spotlight on this important issue.
Thank you. We're also joined by Christina Irving, Client Services Director for the Family Caregiver Alliance, an organization that works to improve the quality of life for family caregivers and the people who receive their care. Christina Irving oversees the staff of the Bay Area Caregiver Resource Center, which provides direct services to family caregivers, including assessment, counseling, education, and support. She's been with the Family Caregiver Alliance for over 13 years, first as a family consultant and then as clinical supervisor. Hi, Christina. Thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Rose. Happy to be here today.
Great to have you. And we should say that OnLock, the Family Caregiver Alliance, and other organizations will be at our Saturday event talking about what resources are available. Again, this Saturday, 11 to 3, at our 220 Montgomery space in San Francisco. Well, I'd love to find out how you both got involved in this work. And I just want to say thank you because, you know, I've taken care of loved ones, including most recently my dad. And I'm just really so grateful to you for the work that you do. It is such important work and deserves so much more attention. So Dr. Ang, let's start with you. How did you get involved in this kind of work?
I would say, like, during my medical training, I was really struck when working in the hospital, seeing people come in and out of the hospital, the same people, and really seeing how broken the healthcare system was, not working for people. And when I would sit down at the bedside and ask people, you know, what happened since the last time I saw you? They're like, oh, I went home. You know, I didn't want to bother my kids. Like, you know, I know that I need to do this, but it's just a lot. And it ended them back in the hospital. I'm like, okay, there's something here that, you know, is beyond the medicines that I can prescribe that I really need to be thinking about. And that's kind of how I ended up in specializing in geriatrics and really thinking about different ways to provide healthcare that could support what people needed to stay out of the hospital and be at home.
You know, we have such a doctor shortage right now that the healthcare system is in a crisis. What does geriatric care look like today? I mean, how easy or difficult is it to find a geriatric doctor in your area?
You know, I would say it is incredibly difficult. I am now, and I'm like the sandwich generation where I have, you know, my friends are seeing their parents getting older and needing more help, but they also have kids and they're like, oh, how can I find a geriatrics doctor like you? And I'm like, oh, that is tough. There's only about 6,000 geriatricians in the entire United States.
Oh my gosh, only 6,000?
Yes, and we all graduate like less than 100 a year. You know, it's not known as one of those, you know, extra money-making professions. And so really, and even myself, when I went into geriatrics, I thought that I would be a primary care provider and just providing a little extra, you know, great care to, like, you know, the portion of my panel that was older. But when I got into my training and saw what a shortage it was, I was like, oh, I think I need to really just focus all my efforts on the older adult population. So even the geriatricians that are out there, you know, I'm like, oh, I want to directly see patients, but also our charges to really try and geriatricize or make it geriatric age friendly, all healthcare systems, so that, you know, the charge isn't for everyone to just try and find that one doctor in your area that might have had the extra training, but really trying to transform systems overall. So I do think it's incredibly difficult. One of my mentors told me that he wanted us to think about geriatrics similar to the way people think about other specialties. Like, you know, if you have a kidney disease, there's a nephrologist, and that maybe you would, you know, as you have kidney problems, you would see that person maybe once, you know, that they would provide some recommendations for your doctor, but they wouldn't be your main doctor. But that when you got to a more, you know, more advanced illness, like when people go on dialysis, then you would probably need to see the geriatric specialist all the time, or maybe they would be become your main doctor. And so trying to figure out what that span looks like when there are actually far fewer geriatricians than nephrologists has always been a struggle, but that is sort of the framework that I try and think about. And UNLOC is one of those places where, you know, we have a concentration, we have an embarrassment of riches of people who are trained in geriatrics, because it is solely focused on older adults with complex needs. But that, you know, trying for people before they need that, you know, it is really difficult. And, you know, so really trying to find places that have a certification in age-friendly care so that they understand sort of the complex nature of taking care of older adults and the caregivers that care for them.
Dr. Eng, this is incredible. So there are only 6,000 geriatricians in this country, and yet 10,000 people are turning 65 every day.
It is a shocking number. And so one of the things I love is that I continue to teach at UCSF, and there they've dedicated that at least every medical student gets, I think it's like 2 weeks of geriatrics teaching in the second year, and in their second year, and that they're, you know, we talk about different models of care. We talk about, no matter what specialty you're going into, you need to recognize caregivers. You know, like, for instance, I co-teach a case about people who are about pediatrics. And so even if you know, you're taking care of a two-year-old, but they're brought in by someone who's older. And I don't know how many people here are, you know, an older adult who's taking care of one of their grandkids. And, you know, if that grandparent gets sick, like, you know, what's going to happen to your child care? So really, you know, no matter what, you know, that's the charge of a pediatric specialist, is just like, oh, in order to keep the child safe and cared for, I also need to be thinking about who's caring for them. So really, that's, I think, something pioneering that UCSF has done, is really trying to infuse this thinking about older adults and training throughout, you know, whatever, through all the courses and whatever specialty people are going into. They need to be thinking about it, even if they don't do, you know, after medical school, they don't do, you know, specific training in geriatrics.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Jessica Eng is medical director at UNLOC, a full-service healthcare program that includes medical, home care, transportation, and senior services. We're also joined today by Christina Irving, Client Services Director for the Family Caregiver Alliance, an organization that works to improve the quality of life for family caregivers and the people who receive their care. Christina, you've been with the Family Caregiver Alliance for over 13 years. How did you get involved in this work?
When I was in graduate school for social work, I interned at the San Francisco VA in the nursing home with hospice and respite patients. And it gave me an opportunity to work quite a bit with their families and their family caregivers. That's who was bringing them in. Those were the people that were trying to help navigate through the healthcare systems that had been taking care of this person for often years, and seeing the challenges that families went through either at end of life or over the course of caregiving when they were trying to get respite services and have those breaks. And I had the opportunity when I finished school, I'd heard of Family Caregiver Alliance. I'd made referrals during my internship to FCA. And was lucky enough that they were hiring. And it's been a great opportunity to work in a community-based setting in supporting families who are providing healthcare, social care, companionship, and really the core of our long-term care in this country provided by these family caregivers. And so to be at a place where we are able to focus our attention specifically on that family caregiver and know that the person that they're caring for will benefit from them supporting themselves and having more care and attention. But to really be able to center the family caregiver in our work is a great opportunity.
Can you talk more about that? You often hear about the caregiver and the load that they're dealing with, the stress, but it's very rare to hear someone say we're centering the caregiver.
It's true. I think there's, as we've seen caregiver support be better recognized and more awareness within the healthcare sector, it often still is around the patient and the caregiver kind of being an extension of the patient and their needs. And when we support the caregiver, it keeps somebody out of the hospital, keeps them at home longer, often reduces healthcare costs. And that's all important and very valuable. But caregivers need support for themselves as a person, not just as an extension of the patient or the person needing care. So how to provide support to a caregiver based on their health, physical health and emotional health and their well-being, and that opportunity for them to feel safe to talk about all the range of feelings that come with caregiving, to have those moments when they might have to say, because of my health, I'm not able to do this at the same level I currently am. And to be able to do that care planning to support them in providing care, but also when they say, I can no longer provide care. And to know that that's legitimate. You know, caregivers are going to be faced with their own health issues, their own financial stressors. And while they generally step into the role of caregiving because they want to, and they want to support their loved one, there are also times where that may no longer be feasible. And how do we support caregivers in being able to set those boundaries and limits for themselves? And then while they're caregiving as well, take care of their own well-being.
Right. Oh, that's so difficult. And so many people who've been caregivers can relate to all of this. Before we get to calls and emails, what would you say to people about how to start the process? Because a lot of people might not even think about caregiving. Maybe their parents aren't that old and they think, yeah, this might happen in 10 or 20 years, but not now. And all of a sudden something can happen. Like, for example, with my dad, he had a life-saving surgery 3 years ago and I moved in with him for 3 months to take care of him. And then he was diagnosed with a very rare and aggressive form of cancer last May. And this came as a shock to us. So, you know, I just was not prepared the first time and even the second time. And you don't really know where to go because you're just thrown in the middle of it, making appointments. If he's in the hospital, we had to go to the hospital as much as we could, trying to balance work with all of this, taking care of his house and his bills. I mean, you just, things are thrown at you overnight so quickly, and you're just trying to keep up. And the last thing on your mind, at least the last thing on my mind, was other than help, family and friends, I didn't even think about calling an organization for help. So Dr. Ang, if you're just thrown into something in kind of a surprising and shocking way, what advice would you give to people?
I think that the advice I would give to them is to put your own mask on first, before caring. That's one of the things that if you're ever in sort of one of those urgent emergent situation, is sort of think about your own, what your own mask is, so that you can, is that you put on your own oxygen before you put oxygen on somebody else. Mm-hmm. And that the health of your loved one is really dependent on you being able to look after yourself, and being able to be healthy and continuing to do that. In that moment is sort of what I usually tell people.
And then from there, once you kind of feel like, okay, I'm taking care of myself and I have all of these things to deal with, mm-hmm. at what point do you reach out for help and where do you go? I mean, if you're dealing with someone with, say, for example, cancer or dementia, mm-hmm. or stroke, there are specific organizations that focus on those issues. But what else can you do? Because a lot of people say, do you have a social worker? Where do you find that? Can you give mm-hmm. tips in terms of trying to find help beyond yourself and then when you're really trying to help a loved one?
Yeah, I think that we do rely a lot on social workers. And I have a personal experience because I was myself was diagnosed with cancer a few years ago, and I'm doing fine now. But I was thrown into the patient role, but my husband and my family were thrown into the caregiver role. And we're like, what do we do? So I do feel that really deeply, and that I've been had an embarrassment of riches that there were social worker, there was a social worker who was able to connect us to a few support organizations to think about what other help that they could do. I do see it as myself, like in my role as a physician, to also talk about that with the my patient and their support networks is like, what support, at Unlock we are the support, but when I wasn't at Unlock being like, there are places that you guys also need, can look to for support, so I have always worked like directly kind of side by side with social workers or like organizations like the Family Caregiver Alliance. Mm-hmm.
Gosh, Dr. Ang, I'm sorry to hear about that, but I'm so glad that you're doing well now. Mm-hmm. Christina, what would you like to add? Where do you think people should start if they are unexpectedly put in a position of caregiving?
I think, as you said, it's that challenge of you just are thrown into everything, and you're often just trying to catch your breath and feel like, can you even tread water for a moment? And so it is very hard to start to explore what resources and services may be out there. I think the first thing for caregivers is not being afraid to speak up and to say that you need help, because there's going to be some healthcare providers and physicians that, like Dr. Ang, who fully understand the needs of caregivers, and they will turn to that caregiver and ask about how are you doing. But a lot of times that focus is going to be on the patient. And so for the caregiver to be able to say, I feel like I need more help, where should I go? And to direct that question to the providers that you're working with. And to be able to say, these are the things that are challenging for me right now. Because some healthcare providers will say, we don't know where to refer people. And that's, I think, a constant challenge for organizations like ours, is to do that outreach and that education and to help them make those connections to the support programs that do exist. But sometimes the needs of caregivers are around managing the medical tasks and care. And their healthcare team is actually well suited to provide some of that guidance and education. So for the caregiver to speak up and say, this is what I'm finding really stressful, this is what is difficult for me. Caregivers don't have to know everything that's out there, but just to be able to say, this is where I feel like I need more help and what's available to me, and to start asking those questions, to try and get to the right resources. Family Caregiver Alliance is one of 11 caregiver resource centers in California. So anywhere in the state, there is caregiver support. The National Family Caregiver Support Program provides services nationwide. They might look a little different depending on where you live. But I think the challenge is we don't talk about caregiving, long-term care, serious illness until we're faced with it. Right. And how do we start these conversations early so that we all can do more planning for the future?
Well, if you are a caregiver or you've been a caregiver, we'd love to hear your experience. What changes would you like to see? What policy changes would you like to see? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Let's hear from Kate in Oakland. Hi, Kate. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you for this show. I work as a family advocate for behavioral health, and I've also personally experienced what I'm going to be talking about. And I'm also an organizer with FASME, Families Advocating for the Seriously Mentally Ill. I'm sorry, I'm emotional. I want to speak to what families experience as caregivers for those with schizophrenia and severe bipolar. These illnesses start when the person is young. So this is not something that you have to anticipate doing as you're older. It's something that you do for the rest of your life and the rest of their lives. And the help that is provided for us is minimal. We have NAMI for support, which is excellent. But what we need are systems that actually treat our loved ones and provide us with support. Often caregivers of those with schizophrenia are looked upon, we feel a certain shame. We know that even now people think of us as, well, what did you do? How did you cause this illness? When that is not the case. These are neurological brain illnesses that people are born with that can be triggered by traumatic experiences. I'm sorry, I can go on and on about this. Let me just, I'll try to cut to the chase. What we need are proper facilities for treatment for our loved ones. What we need is family support in that treatment. We are excluded from it by laws such as HIPAA. We are not partnered with. We need to be partnered with. We know more about these people than anybody else that is going to come and go in their lives, and we're going to be there for the duration. We are also being told now, because we cannot get the help that we need by calling 911, because we do not have enough hospital beds to put people in need in. And often families are in danger, and the person that they love is in danger from themselves. These are very difficult illnesses to live with. I cannot tell you, overemphasize that. And yet we're told we can't get help. And we are told instead we have to get restraining orders on our kids. So many of the people you see on the streets, the families wanted to care for them but could not because the illness is too debilitating for everybody around without proper treatment. It doesn't have to be that way, but that is often the way it is. So we're told to treat our kids. And I'll stop now. I could go on and on. I'm sorry.
Kate, no, thank you for this. I think this is so important. A listener called in yesterday and said, please do a show about families advocating for the seriously mentally ill. And this is something that we don't talk enough about. How pervasive is this, Kate? Because it seems like, I mean, based on what you're telling me and what I heard from our caller yesterday, so many of these families are really suffering in silence.
Oh, yeah. Suffering in silence, but given a voice, they will speak up. And that's what FASME tries to do, is provide that voice for them. So we are active. It's mainly in Alameda County, although we have people also in San Francisco now, and we're in contact with families around the state. I'm sorry, what was the first part of your question?
I just wondered how pervasive is this? Because
you know
better than most, I mean, the conversation around people with mental illness, it can be pretty nasty because we see so many people with serious mental illnesses in the Bay Area.
Yep.
And people often forget these are the children of someone. They've got loved ones.
Yes, exactly.
How did this happen to them?
Exactly. In terms of pervasiveness, just schizophrenia, okay? And there's other psychotic illnesses such as schizoaffective disorder, bipolar 1, even serious depression can create psychosis. But just schizophrenia, a ballpark figure is 1% of the population. So you figure on every city block, depending on how dense it is, there's going to be at least one person. Mm-hmm. It is very pervasive. What we don't have is a treatment oriented towards them when they are first getting ill. We have what we refer to as a fail up system. So you have to go cycling through the hospital if you're lucky, or jail, or be on the streets or whatever in order to get the care that you needed at the outset of the illness. So families are basically being told, take them home, wait until it gets worse. Mm. And that it's agonizing to watch your child lose their sanity and not be able to do anything about it. And it's very painful for them. It's torture. It is not something to be seen in a romantic way at all.
Well, Kate, would you mind giving your number to our engineer, Kevin, because we would love to do a show about this. This deserves an entire hour, obviously more than that, but we'd love to do a show about this because it just doesn't get enough attention.
Thank you so much. And
okay.
Yes, I would love to do that. Have a wonderful show.
Thank you so much, Kate. Dr. Eng, what are your thoughts about what Kate laid out there, that so many families are trying to get loved ones with severe mental illnesses help, but there just aren't enough beds, there aren't enough resources?
I'm so glad you're going to do a whole nother show on it, because it is a lot. But I think that, you know, I'm really glad that she brought it up, because when people think about caregiving, they're thinking often about people with like physical disability that need caregiving. But I think that, you know, recognizing that mental illness is often a chronic disease, and that there are people that are caregiving for a lifetime for them, and that they're often a lot of the supports and even the criteria, I think, you know, through Medicaid about, you know, what kind of programs caregivers can support through, like, don't often think about or include serious mental illness as one of the areas that have the same support as, you know, a physical disability or illness that you're caregiving for.
Right. Christina, what would you like to add?
I think there is such a need to look at kind of across conditions. How do we make sure that we're supporting caregivers? One, because so many of these conditions can be comorbid. Somebody may have a mental illness. They may have physical health issues. We look at folks with developmental disabilities, and as they age and who are their caregivers, it's often parents who are then aging themselves. And so many of our programs for caregivers, the eligibility is based on the diagnosis or age of the person that they are caring for. And yet there can be overlap in terms of the needs for services and supports. And so how do we break down some of those silos, or at least provide more seamless integration so that families aren't having to struggle so much with that? That's a start. It doesn't fix all the systemic issues in terms of what medical interventions or supports are available for the patient, but what do we need to do to better support the families who are caring for them?
Well, Kate, thank you again for calling in, and we will definitely do a show about everything that you laid out, because it definitely needs more attention. Families advocating for the seriously mentally ill. So thank you so much for calling. Today, we are talking about the caregiving crisis in this country, which is only growing. I'm so glad Kate called in, because we often talk about the aging population, but often people are taking care of sick children, taking care of loved ones who have serious mental illnesses. It's not just the aging population. And it's just a good reminder that when we talk about caregiving, it's very broad. So if you have a story to share, if you're a caregiver or you have been a caregiver, we'd love to hear about your experience. What policy changes would you like to see? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Christina Irving is Client Services Director for the Family Caregiver Alliance. Dr. Jessica Ang is Medical Director at OnLock. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are spending the hour about solutions to the caregiving crisis. And if you're in the Bay Area, we'll be having a special Caregiving for Caregivers event this Saturday from 11 to 3 at our space at 220 Montgomery Street. A number of organizations, including OnLock and the Family Caregiver Alliance, will be there to talk about the resources that they provide. We're going to also be doing a community sharing program at 1 o'clock. I'll be talking about my caregiving experience with others, and then we'll be talking about making connections and solutions. So we hope to see you there this Saturday, 220 Montgomery Street in San Francisco, 11 a.m. to 3. You can find information at kalw.org and then click the events tab. If you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today, we're joined by Dr. Jessica Ang, Medical Director at OnLock. It's a full-service healthcare program that includes medical, home care, transportation, and senior services. Christina Irving is Client Services Director for the Family Caregiver Alliance. They work to improve the quality of life for family caregivers and the people who receive their care. Let's go next to Ariana in San Francisco. Hi, Ariana. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Rose. Yes, I wanted to find out, hoping that Medicare and other insurances will finally kick in and help with home care. My aunt lives with me, and she has cancer, and now we've got hospice, and I have to work, and they can only come for like an hour and a half a day, and there is no other help. So that's what I'm hoping for, is that there could be some kind of health care as far as not worrying about paying someone $40 an hour to be sitting there with her. So that's my question.
Wow. Well, thank you for the call. And I'm so sorry to hear about your experience. This one is, this should already be in place, Dr. Ang. What do you think it's going to take for Medicare to cover home health services? Because I remember when we were taking care of my dad, if we needed a break because it's just such difficult work, it does cost about $120 because it's 40 an hour, minimum 3 hours. And these people are angels and they should be paid this amount. I mean, to think that you're walking into a home, you have no idea what you're walking into, and you're changing a complete stranger. And every person that came into the house treated my dad like he was their family member. These people are amazing. But not everyone can afford this. I mean, if you get in-home care for a month, it's about $10,000 a month. What do you think it's going to take to ensure that Medicare covers home health care, Dr. Ang?
You know, I think it, you know, in, this is me being like, you know, a little bit of a skeptic, but in in the United States, I think money talks. Like, I, you know, we don't invest in the social safety net that as other countries do that would include this, but that I think that like companies are recognizing that, you know, lost productivity because people are trying to caregive, or that, you know, and that it should be recognized similar to, you know, people being able to have time, you know, to have time off to take care of their loved ones after, you know, after the birth of a child. Similarly, people have ongoing caregiving needs, either them providing it, but that really sort of demanding that this is something that needs to be included in, you know, as a benefit for people who are employees, that, you know, either I'm going to caregive, or like it needs to be one of my healthcare benefits to access caregiving hours, like it is companies give that out for childcare. I'm sure Christina has some other thing, but that's something that I've been really thinking about, because I'm not perhaps having a lot of faith that Congress is going to do this, that it really needs to be this upswell from you know, I think overall the business sector, that this is something that is really needed either from the private or our public industry. But right now I'm even having hard times thinking about expanding. You know, I think like in my wish list of expanding, when so much of the current infrastructure that supports caregivers, even though it's, you know, in piecemeal, is already under attack by different, you know, but, you know, with state budget and also what's going through Congress right now. So I'm trying to balance those two things in my head right now, because I want to put in for sure for this to be covered under my wish list. And so sometimes that's what I'm thinking, is that where it needs to come from, this upswell support, both from citizens and for businesses, that in order for our country to go forward, we need to recognize that this is a need that needs to be filled.
This is a great point, Dr. Eng, because definitely in this Congress, this is not happening. I mean, there's so many headlines out about Republicans going after Medicaid. So we can dream about this at the moment, but there's no possible way with these people in DC that any expansion is going to happen. So it's either got to happen at the state level, but even at the state level in California, we just did a show recently about Governor Newsom wanting to bring down the amount you can have in assets to qualify for Medi-Cal. So as you say, Dr. Eng, we've got to be realistic here, and maybe it comes from the business sector, because, you know, if you're working, I mean, your head is not there. You're just not yourself. You're constantly stressed out, and yet people have to pay their bills. And so that's a great point. Christina, what are your thoughts? I mean, I think we have to keep talking about what we should have in a country with so much wealth, but then we have to talk about what's realistic given where we are politically right now.
Exactly. And similar to Dr. Eng, I don't know that I'm overly optimistic. Definitely not right now. There have been policies floated about expanding long-term care coverage under Medicare. You know, initially under the Affordable Care Act, there was a little bit more around long-term care and essentially long-term care insurance that was challenged and unfortunately was removed. So we've had these little steps forward in trying to introduce it, and we just have not had enough leverage to make it happen. So I think it is something we all need to continue pushing for. The closest we've gotten lately is under Medicare. There is the GUIDE model, which is a dementia care navigation. So it's very specific to dementia, to traditional fee-for-service Medicare. It is still not providing ongoing in-home help, but it is actually covering respite for family caregivers. And that's really the first we've seen Medicare kind of step into that place of not just the very limited home health, most often after a hospitalization, but a little bit more coverage specifically to provide family caregivers a break. So we've seen these little toes in the water of trying to expand Medicare to really meet the need, but I think it's going to take just a lot more work on advocates. I agree. I think when we can see it come from the private sector and from employers, that might help make the case of why this is necessary. it feels like an uphill battle right now, but I think it's really looking at who are our advocates, who are our allies in that type of policy change, and how do we continue pushing forward for that to happen.
Well, for what it's worth, in October, Vice President Kamala Harris mm-hmm. proposed to expand Medicare to provide this kind of in-home care to help families struggling with the costs of long-term care. It really didn't get the attention it deserved, unfortunately. And then in April, Senator Bernie Sanders, Representative Pramila Jayapal, and Representative Debbie Dingell once again introduced their Medicare for All Act. So there are some politicians pushing for this, but in this Congress, this is just not going to happen. But we need to talk about what are alternatives, given that fact. So thank you for that call. Let's go to our next caller, Lynn in Santa Cruz. Hi, Lynn. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you very much for your show. I live here in Santa Cruz, and my family has gone through the issue of in-home care with the companies that are in the big area. That one in particular is run by a MBA from Stanford. So I my best advice to your speakers is I've worked very closely with California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, and they go by CANHR. They are an organization that works directly with the legislature, and they have attorneys. As your docs are saying, you know, we have toeholds. But this organization, they moved from San Francisco. I think they're over in Oakland now. But they are a stellar, stellar organization. And I get emails from them with certain bills that are in front of our state legislature supporting different aspects of what you've spoken about and asking, now's the time to get a letter in. So I can only really support Canner. In my experience, in-home care with some of these large Silicon Valley companies, they do not provide the continuum of care. They have in-home care, but they run their caregivers through. There's no consistency. And what that does for, as your docs know, anybody that has a serious illness or dementia, the continuum care is really key for the family and for the customer. I like using the word customer rather than the word patient because they're paying. And we went to court and finally got Judge Lori Pang to say that that this particular organization needed to provide a continuum of care to my mom, and actually recommended some small organizations. So I would say that to the docs, and I would say that to people in this area, if you can find small companies that provide care, those are the ones to go to. The other ones in the Silicon Valley, they're making money, and they're making big money. And they you know, there's the other side, people that have money but are sitting there. And I've had caregivers come up to me with this one company and say, I love your mom. I love your mom. I want to stay. But when I get a call on the phone from, and I won't say their name, that I have to go because they're having a problem with a client, a customer, and they say, you have to go over to San Mateo right now. We have a problem there. If I don't go, I am fired. So there's a RICO going on here that with doctors that are out on their own now, and they have relationships with these companies. I have a doc out of that's affiliated with Stanford who's out on her own right now, and she has no staff, but her staff is the companies that are servicing these individuals. So the doc walks in, takes a look at what's going on in my mom's house, and then the company is there, and she giving them orders in terms of what needs to be done. It is a live RICO thing going on in the Silicon Valley for people that have money, and those people are the ones that are not only taken advantage of monetarily, but their care is so poor that they can't, you know, they're being driven crazy by the turnover of the caregivers.
Wow. Well, Lynn, thank you for the call. It sounds like we need to do a show about exactly what you're laying out there, because a lot of people, you know, if they decide that that's best for their family to find a home for their loved one, how do you find one? How do you find one that will actually help your loved one? So I just wrote down the organization that you mentioned, CANHR, and we will definitely do a show about this. Thank you so much for calling in. And then Philip wanted to add over email, I've been working as a caregiver and I love it, but I must say that while the agencies may be charging $40 an hour, the caregiver is not making anything like that. My agency charges $25 and I get $15. Wow. Wow, Philip. Thank you. And thank you for the work that you do. See, Dr. Eng, that's the other thing. People like Philip and the people who came to take care of my dad, they love the work. I mean, I have to try not to get emotional here. I remember we needed a break and someone came in to change my dad. I mean, talk about the most intimate thing. This is a stranger walking into your house and changing you. He was so amazing. And by the time he left, he and my dad were hugging. You know, my dad said, I want to take you to a Warriors game. I mean, these people are just amazing and they want to be doing this work and they deserve to be paid for the work that, I mean, what is more important than this kind of work? And yet Philip is making $15 an hour doing this.
I completely agree. And I think, you know, in the various organizations I've worked at, you know, where people are like, I can make more at McDonald's than doing this type of work, you know, so why should I keep doing this? And, you know, I also want to highlight what the caller said is that there is private equity more and more in healthcare, and now like in the aging space too. And I don't want to say that it's all bad, but that, you know, I don't know where people get profits from in this type of work, and that it is really I appreciate what she said about thinking about which organizations you work with, you know, that are smaller or that are based in the community. I think UNLOC has been, you know, in existence for over 50 years. And really, I think, you know, it's one of the things that attracted to me to working there, that it's really based in the community and trying to feed what the needs of the community are. And we sort of adjust what we do based on what, you know, the needs are from the community and the participants that we have, you know, and whatever their cultural background is, and trying to meet that. And I think in my experience that it isn't the case for every organization, and that, you know, really in terms of hiring and vetting, like who is going out to taking care of the participants, I think it is really, really difficult, you know, for, you know, I think from the family side to figure out. But I do agree, it is not every organization is the same, trying to make sure that you get the quality of care and that the caregivers that you are hiring are being treated well by the company that employs them. That is a group that needs advocacy more than ever. And that I would also agree that CANHR is a wonderful organization that we, and I'm sure the Family Caregiver Alliance, partner with in terms of advocacy.
Well, thank you, Lynn. We'll definitely do a show about that. Let's hear one more personal story. Let's go to Bobby in Oakland. Hi, Bobby. Thank you for holding.
Hi. Good morning. How are you today?
Good, thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Yes. Again, I want to say that my condolences with your father, you know, because I had a father that passed on prostate cancer, as you know, and I wish I was there, but it's in South Carolina. Oh. And I would just want to say that like taking care of elderly people or kids, you know, is very important, and at the same time, it's very easy. See, the thing about it that I think personally, that you got to come in with love. You know, you got to come there with good intentions to make sure that that person in that community keep living longer and longer as possible. And also, because I do in-home care myself, but at the same time, see, what I do, I try to make sure that my patient house is clean, that my patient eat very well. Sometimes I use olive oil to make her dinner. You know, it's just all type of treatment. I call it extended care for individuals in the state of California that deserves that. But not only that, to try to keep them, it's very simple. But like I said, you got to come in with love, like as you would do yourself, as you want someone else to do you. Mm. It's okay. Sometimes we get shy, we get nervous or whatever. But at the same time, we have to keep people living. We have to go to extended care in the state of California to make sure everyone of all nationalities can get the same treatment as the next person to keep these people living. Mm. It's very simple to me. Very simple.
Bobby, thank you for calling in, and your patients are so lucky to have you. I mean, the compassion that you have is amazing, and really thank you for that. Final thoughts, Christina, we only have about a minute left. People like Bobby, I mean, imagine being cared for by Bobby, such a sweet man, and he should be paid, you know, a living wage in this country. And it's like all these people want to do this great work. And it needs to be expanded. I mean, one of my dreams is that we have hospice across the board, no matter how old you are or what you have, because I think that would help on so many levels. So what are your final thoughts, Christina? We have about 30 seconds left.
We absolutely need to improve support for the direct care workforce. That is necessary for older adults, people with disabilities, illnesses, for family caregivers. And to the earlier point, find ways to have it covered so that it actually is affordable and available to everybody, regardless of income, status, wealth, anything, to make sure that this is available for people when it is needed.
Right, because a few people have written in saying, I'm low income. It's so hard to get what you need. The supplies are very expensive.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's just one example.
There's caregiving is expensive. Home care, medical supplies, incontinence supplies, co-pays. And there's so much work to be done in improving the accessibility and availability of all the range of long-term care services.
Well, we're going to continue doing shows about this. Christina Irving with the Family Caregiver Alliance and Dr. Jessica Ang with Unlock. Thank you both for your work. Thank you for joining us. And thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.